This is Movies for the Blind, episode 72, Stage Fright, part 1.
No, I love strange men. I mean, I'm very fond of them.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. Happy to be delving into some of the work of Alfred Hitchcock now. Fortunately, several Hitchcock films are already available with description, mainly those he made in England before heading to Hollywood. Among them, The Lady Vanishes, The 39 Steps, and the original version of The Man Who Knew Too Much. Now, this film was made on a brief return to England after he had made a name for himself with films like Notorious and Suspicion, but before going back to Hollywood to become a legend with films like Rear Window, To Catch a Thief, and Psycho. Now, Hitchcock was known for his actresses, and he was dealing with two formidable ones here, Marlene Dietrich and Jane Wyman, who reportedly were not too crazy about each other. While Dietrich was the legend in the making we remember now, Wyman was Warner Brothers' big star at the time. Warner Brothers was making the movie, so Wyman got the top billing, as you are about to hear. From 1950, this is Stage Fright. An elaborately decorated safety curtain hangs in a theater. Warner Brothers Pictures presents Jane Wyman, Marlene Dietrich, Michael Wilding, Richard Todd in Alfred Hitchcock's Stage Fright. The curtain slowly rises with Sybil Thorndike, Kay Walsh, Miles Mallison, Hector McGregor, Joyce Grenfell, Andre Morel, Patricia Hitchcock, Ballard Berkeley, and Alastair Sim. Screenplay by Whitfield Cook. Adaptation by Alma Reville. Based on a novel by Selwyn Jepson. Director of photography, Wilkie Cooper. Film editor, E.B. Jarvis. Sound by Harold King. Music composed by Leighton Lucas. Musical director, Louis Levy. Directed by Alfred Hitchcock. The curtain finishes rising on a real scene of central London, where a car speeds down a street. A young woman drives the convertible as the young man beside her looks back.
Any sign of the police?
No, no sign. Looks like we're getting away with it.
Good.
How far is it to your father's boat?
2 hours with luck. Your luck seems to be very good, touching wood. Could you tell me now what happened? I'd really like to know. Only if you feel like it.
It's Charlotte Inwood.
Oh.
She's in a jam.
But that doesn't surprise me.
No, this is serious, Eve. It's deadly serious. She was all over the place. I had to help her. Anybody would have done. I was in my kitchen. It was about 5 o'clock. The doorbell rang and I went downstairs to see who it was.
He remembers going down the stairs of his flat to his front door. When he opens it, he finds a woman wearing a blood-stained dress.
Johnny, you love me. Say that you love me. You do love me, don't you?
She steps inside.
I think he's dead. I'm sure he's dead. I didn't mean it.
Who's dead?
My husband. We had a terrible quarrel. About you.
They go upstairs.
Oh, he was vile. You know the sort of things he can say. He started to hit me. I grabbed something. I was out of my mind with fear. Oh, what am I to do?
Darling, pull yourself together. He may not be.
The curtains, Johnny. Draw the curtains.
Running up the rest of the stairs, he hurries into his living room and draws a curtain over a large window. He leaves the door open for Charlotte to enter and sit. Then he closes it. When he steps to a liquor bottle, she stands and crosses the room as he pours a drink. She sits again and takes off her jacket.
I thought I had some brandy. Here, drink this.
She accepts the glass and drinks.
He was an abominable man. Why do women marry abominable men?
Well, where was all this?
In my bedroom.
Anyone else in the house?
I left the servants in the country. I drove up early to have an hour's rest before the performance. Oh, what shall I do? I can't go on. I can't.
She gets up.
Has anyone seen you?
No, I don't think so. There wasn't a soul in the street. I jumped into my car and came here. It's parked around the corner. Oh, Johnny, what will they do to me?
Oh, don't tremble like that. We'll find a way. We'll see you all right, darling.
But you must call the theater. I can't play tonight. Tell them I'm ill. Heaven, will it be true enough?
No, you must go on tonight. You've got to. As if nothing had happened. Nothing has happened. You drove straight to the theatre, do you understand? Straight to the theatre. You haven't been home at all. Now get that into your head.
She steps away from him and notices the huge splotch of blood on the skirt of her dress.
With my dress? There's blood on it. I must go back and change.
No, you can't do that. Well, I could go myself.
Oh, darling, could you? There's no one there. I'd give her the key. There's a blue dress like this in the big cupboard next to my window in the bedroom.
She grabs her purse.
Here's the key.
Are you sure the servants aren't back yet?
No, but you must hurry. Oh, please, Johnny.
She opens the door.
This is my only chance. You will, won't you?
It's a risk. Let me think a minute. I mean, well, you know, I want to help you, but...
She backs away from him.
Go or don't go. It's all the same. I thought you loved me. Doesn't matter now.
Oh, my dear. My darling.
He kisses her passionately.
I'd do anything for you. You know that.
She touches his cheek, and he hurries to the stairs.
I'll be as quick as I can.
Soon after, Jonathan parks in front of a townhouse. Getting out of his car, he approaches the door of number 78, then unlocks it with the key Charlotte gave him. He steps into the foyer and looks at a set of stairs to his right and an open door to his left, closing the front door. He steps forward, glancing up at the stairs which curve around him. Cautiously, he goes up the stairs. He turns to the door sound outside, but continues on to the first landing, which has one closed door to his right. Turning his back on it, he goes on up the stairs to the next landing and approaches another door, but pauses before opening it. He walks on along the landing, past a painting of Charlotte, to another door, which he opens and steps inside. Across the room is an empty fireplace, a poker lying on the carpet before it, and not far away, a man's body lying on its side against a set of double doors. Grimacing slightly, Jonathan crosses the room. With gloved hands, he picks up the poker and sets it back with the others beside the fireplace. Then he turns to the body. He steps over to it and tries to open one of the double doors, but the body is leaning heavily against it. Jonathan struggles to pull it open and succeeds, then reaches into the closet inside and finds a dress for Charlotte, which he takes off its hanger. Closing the door, he bundles up the dress and looks down at the body before stepping over and away from it. He notices an open door to an adjoining office and thinks. He crosses the room again, past the door where he entered, and goes into the office. Setting down the dress, he hurries to the desk and picks up a paperweight, then opens a glass door to a balcony and uses the paperweight to smash the glass around the door handle as if someone had broken in. He puts down the paperweight and overturns a lamp, knocks over other things on the desk, and pulls papers from a drawer, throwing them around. He does the same with papers in other drawers. He picks up a photograph among the papers, a publicity shot of Charlotte with six men in top hat and tails, including Jonathan. He looks up and spots a woman standing over the body. Running across the office, he grabs the dress and bolts out another door to the landing. As he runs down the stairs, the woman comes out. She catches a glimpse of his back as he escapes. Later at his flat.
But your maid, Nellie.
Oh, yes. She was going to the house to pick up some shoes I need for the show.
She changes into the clean dress.
Did she recognize you?
I don't know. You ought to get to the theater. The police are bound to go there to tell you the bad news.
Give me my belt, darling, will you?
Turning from a window, he gets the belt from the bed and gives it to her.
Oh, Johnny, what have I done to you? If Nellie recognized you, it won't be safe here. You ought to go away for a while.
I don't think that'll do much good.
But they'll come here. You must go at once. Oh, my dearest darling, you saved me. We must think of you now. You've got to hide.
From behind her, he kisses her neck and she checks herself in a compact mirror.
I care what happens to me. Your job is to try to forget everything. Let me do the worrying. I'll find a way.
She powders her face.
Then we'll start again, won't we? You and I. No more stealth and cheating and lying.
He kisses her neck again.
I must hurry, darling. I'll worry about you.
Well, you mustn't. You're an actress. You're playing a part.
She gets her purse and jacket.
No nerves when you're on.
I'll try.
He opens the room's door for her, but she stops.
My dress.
It's draped over a chair.
I'll get rid of that. Don't worry.
Don't come down. We shouldn't be seen together. Au revoir, my darling.
Au revoir.
They embrace, and she rushes off.
For heaven's sake, don't worry.
He watches her go down the stairs to the door and leave. Then he goes to the blood-stained dress. Bundling it up, he goes to put it in an empty fireplace, then pauses, realizing there's no fire to destroy it. He tosses the dress back onto the chair and thinks desperately. He considers where he was on the stairs, near the bottom of them, when Nellie spotted him. Then he imagines Nellie talking to two detectives over the body, gesturing toward the office. Jonathan's eyes start to widen with growing fear when he imagines the detectives opening a phone book, flipping through the pages, and finding his name. He turns to the phone, but his hand hovers over it, then retracts. He watches it, almost reaching for it again. When it stops ringing, he picks up the receiver and makes a call. An older woman answers.
Yes?
May I speak to Miss Eve Gill, please?
Oh, dear, no. I'm afraid she isn't in.
She said she was going for the weekend to her father, but I thought she'd be back.
Yes, that's quite right. She got back last night. She's had rehearsals all day today at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. You know, the RADA.
Do you know where she is now?
Didn't you hear? She's at the RADA rehearsing.
Frustrated, he hangs up. He steps to a cupboard and opens it. Then takes down a suitcase. Turning to the door buzzer, he sets down the suitcase. Then looks out a window at two men outside his front door. Thinking, Jonathan puts the suitcase back in the cupboard and closes it. He slowly crosses the room, passing the dress on the chair on his way to the landing. As he stands at the top of the stairs, he notices the dress again, then hurries back in to pick it up and bundle it under his sweater. He closes the door, straightening his blazer over the bulge under his sweater. He gathers his nerve and starts down the steps to the front door. He adjusts his tie as the door comes closer. Smoothing down his hair, he gets to the door and opens it.
Jonathan Cooper?
Yes?
We're police officers. May we see you for a few minutes, please?
Oh, certainly. Please come in.
They do, stepping past him. As he moves to close the door, he runs out and hurries to their car. He jumps in as they come out. He locks the doors and they struggle to open them as he tries to start the car. When one tries to smash a window with his arm, Jonathan points out its safety glass designation. The one detective succeeds in breaking the glass, but not enough to get in before Jonathan gets the car going and speeds away as another police car pulls up. The other police car chases him, but is blocked by a horse and wagon Jonathan had just gotten past. At the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, the car with the broken window is parked outside. Inside, Jonathan approaches a rehearsal theater, then opens a door to it to find Eve and other actors on a small stage.
No, darling, don't run your words into one another.
Outside, the police car brakes beside the first one, The detectives jump out and look around. They go to a door of the academy, but find it locked. Turning back, they notice a young woman coming up some stairs from a side entrance and head for it. Inside, Jonathan closes the rehearsal theater door and looks around a corner and down a hall toward backstage. He goes that way, pausing at a doorway to the backstage area. He goes up some steps and turns a corner just as the detectives arrive at the other end. In the wings, Jonathan tries to get Eve's attention. He glances down the hall again and spots the detectives at the other end. He turns again toward Eve. He grabs a hat from an actor and uses it to bow to her on stage, then turns her around and holds her.
Go away, what are you doing here?
The police are after me. You see them?
Looking over his shoulder, she spots them opening the doors in the back.
They think I killed a man. Can you hide me on your father's boat?
She watches them leaving the theater.
They've just gone.
The teacher stands.
I was under the impression that this was a class of intelligent students trying to master an extremely difficult and beautiful art. I haven't the pleasure of knowing you, young man, but I shall certainly report your behavior to Sir Kenneth.
Jonathan goes back into the wings.
Now we'll begin the rehearsal again with the other cast. This cast seemed to think that acting is just fun and games.
Eve goes to the wings as they change.
Oh, Jonathan.
Let's get out of here. I've got your car here.
It's parked in front. I'll show you to the back entrance and pick you up there.
In the car.
Eve, do you hate me now that you know about Charlotte and me?
Well, I could never hate you, Jonathan, because we're such old friends. And, well, just because. But I do wish I'd taken lessons on the second fiddle.
Good old Eve.
He takes her hand on the bloody dress which lies between them. Later, the moon glows through clouds above the car as it approaches a seaside cottage. Jonathan carries the dress as he gets out with Eve, who gestures to him to follow her past the cottage. An old balding man peers out a window of the cottage, then steps away. He opens the cottage door and watches Eve and Jonathan walking along a pier.
Bring him in here!
They stop.
It's warmer.
Soon after, inside, he plays accordion.
Do you think I behave like a fool?
He glances at Jonathan dozing, sitting up.
On the whole, I think so. I think your boyfriend has behaved like a fool. I have a strong premonition that I'm going to behave like a fool. It's infectious.
Do you mean you're going to help him?
Why not? He's a friend of yours, isn't he?
She sits beside him.
Oh, yes.
I see. More than a friend, eh?
When I'm with him, I get a feeling in here that sort of...
Yes. We'll go into the symptoms later. Meanwhile, I take it you're either keen on him or still hungry.
She reaches toward him.
I'm in love with him.
The man smirks and steps past them.
You've roped him, but he's not yet broken to harness. Is that it?
Frowning, she stands.
I wish Charlotte Inwood was in.
She throws a tissue in a burning fireplace.
Ooh, I've seen her on the stage. She'd have made me laugh. If I hadn't been strictly on my guard.
Well, she couldn't make me laugh. Off or on the stage. I can't bear to sit by and see what she's doing to Jonathan. She's like an evil spirit. Just look at him.
Ruined and by a woman. Now you want me to take the ruins for a little cruise.
He takes off the accordion.
Well, is that it?
Well, I thought you could take him across the channel or to the Irish coast, and then he could hide out a bit.
Well, the journey sounds attractive, but less attractive to help a suspected murderer to escape. Particularly with my reputation.
There's nothing the matter with your reputation.
Oh, indeed. I rather flattered myself that there was. As a matter of fact, the customs people have their eye on me. I'm suspected of being a smuggler.
But you're not.
Oh, yes, I am.
One cask of brandy? That doesn't mean you're a smuggler.
Two casks.
She pours tea.
That was 15 years ago.
But I've done one or two other things since that I didn't tell you or your mother about.
Can't have been very much.
Well, of course not. Not very much. Nothing could appear very much to a murderer's moll, But I never hoped to be appreciated. Yes, your mother cured me of that. That's why I never could be bothered with your mother.
I appreciate you, Father. You and Captain Kidd are my favorite heroes.
Eve's father smiles.
My child, I am not deceived. If there's one thing I cannot bear, it's insincerity.
He picks up the dress.
Oh, but you've got to help him. You will help him, won't you? He's lonely. He hasn't got any friends but me, and maybe you. You will help him, won't you?
He hasn't got me.
Yet.
He inspects the bloodstain.
You're just dying to get into a part of this, and you know you are.
Part in this melodramatic play, you mean? No, that's where you're treating it, Eve. As if it were a play you were acting in at the Academy. Everything seems a fine acting role when you're stage struck, doesn't it, my dear?
He holds the dress up to himself.
Here you have a plot, an interesting cast, even a costume.
He looks at it in a mirror.
Little the worse for wear. Unfortunately, Eve, in this real and earnest life, we must face the situation in all its bearings. Yes.
He inspects the stain more closely.
What do you mean?
Well, Miss Charlotte Inwood appears to be an expert in garden paths. I think she's led your young friend up the garden path. I think we should hesitate before we follow him.
But why?
Well, I don't know how this bloodstain got onto this dress, but I do know that somebody smeared it on deliberately.
But why should they do that?
Well, Miss Inwood is an actress, and a very good one. She has an eye for an emotional situation. Supposing she wanted our somnolent young friend to go to her house and be spotted there. Well, the sanguinary garment would provide a very plausible reason. A very plausible reason indeed.
So that's why she didn't change her dress before she went to his rooms.
Well, I cannot imagine Miss Inwood going to see her young man. Your young man, whosoever young man he is, in this nasty, messy condition. No, this dress is a clue, my dear, a very important clue. And though it grieves me, of all people, to have to say it, Eve, I think we should go to the police.
Taking the dress, Eve goes to Jonathan and shakes him.
Jonathan! Jonathan! Jonathan, wake up!
He does.
Jonathan, how far do you think you could trust Charlotte?
I'd trust her with my life. What do you mean?
This bloodstain didn't happen by accident. It was put here deliberately.
Don't be ridiculous.
He stands.
I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to turn me against Charlotte, but you can't.
He grabs it.
What's this doing here, anyhow? It should have been destroyed hours ago.
He throws it into the fire.
You fool! There goes evidence that could have helped you.
Well, you're not to say things against Charlotte. I'm doing all this for her sake. You're just jealous of her.
Young man, I'd remind you, you're my daughter's guest. I'd like better manners from you.
Oh, I am sorry, Eve. Please forgive me. I lost my head for a moment. I can hardly think. I'm almost dead for want of sleep. I wonder, would it be too much trouble if I went to bed? That is, if Commodore Gill wants to let me stay.
Gill looks at Eve, then at Jonathan.
Now, your room's at the head of the stairs. You'll be quite comfortable. And if you want anything to read in bed, you'll find some quite good murder mysteries in there. I beg your pardon.
With a glance at Eve, Jonathan goes up the stairs.
Look, Eve.
Shushing him, she gestures that they go outside. She escorts him to the door, where she puts a scarf around his neck over his loose sweater and gets her coat. She opens the door. Putting on a fishing hat, he follows her out. On the pier.
At last we are alone and unobserved. You know, I'm beginning to enjoy this.
Father, do you think she arranged to put the suspicion on Jonathan? Do you think she deliberately framed him?
The thought had crossed my mind. That was why I reluctantly suggested that our friends, the police, ought to be told about it. It was too late now. Our only piece of evidence has gone up the chimney.
But we must help Jonathan. He'll do nothing for himself. He's hopelessly in love with that woman. It's up to us.
Yes. But it won't be easy.
It is easy. I'll go to her and see her myself.
Would that be wise?
But I don't care whether it's wise or not. I'll tell her we know about the dress and how the bloodstain got there, and we know every move of her game. I'll make her talk. It'll be one woman to another.
An impressive situation at any time.
Well, she'll give herself away. She won't be able to help it. You'll see.
I won't see. I won't be there. And neither will you. If we're right in what we think, she's a desperate woman, a dangerous woman. She won't give herself away. You'd be giving her another alternative.
She has no alternative.
She might murder you.
Oh, don't be so melodramatic, Father.
Look, my love, face facts. What is the least that can happen to you if you tackle this remarkable lady? She will at once pick up a little pink telephone and call the police. She will then give you in charge for concealing a fugitive from justice. Eventually, you will be tried at the Old Bailey, where, if you're lucky, you might get off with, now let me see, a couple of years, which you will spend in Holloway Prison, meditating on the folly of transmuting melodrama into real life. Well, you see, the best thing you can do, my girl, is to go back to your academy and practice your soul-shaking antics in surroundings where they can't do any harm. After all, this fellow can't possibly mean all that to you.
But he does, Father.
She steps away from him. Early the next morning, Eve comes down the stairs putting on her coat and wearing a scarf over her head. She approaches her father, who holds the accordion as he sleeps in a bed cut into the wall like a berth. She gently lifts his arm and gets the accordion away from it. Checking he hasn't woken, she sets the accordion down and moves his arm to a more comfortable position. She sneaks away from him to the door. Turning the handle carefully, she opens the door and leaves. She steps to her convertible, but as she opens the door, she spots a note left under a wrench. Remember, she's a dangerous woman, so be careful. Your loving father. Eve smiles, glances back toward the cottage, and gets in the car. She drives away. Later, in London, double-decker buses drive around Trafalgar Square on another busy day. Eve walks around a corner, then pauses, looking across the street. A crowd is gathered outside Charlotte's townhouse. Concerned, she takes the scarf from her head, then crosses the street toward the scene, where Bobby stands outside the door. As a detective walks past them inside, Eve steps in front of the crowd and tries to see where he goes.
Move along there, please.
But I'd like...
Now, move on there, miss. There's nothing to see.
She backs into the crowd and soon makes a call from a phone booth.
Hello, Father. I'm outside the Inwood house.
Outside? Why not inside?
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Father. The police won't let anyone near the place.
Really? Very extraordinary. Well, look, you've done your best now. Come back here and decide what to do about the man that came to dinner.
Oh, I feel awful. I've been listening to the people in the crowd talking, and they assume that you know who is guilty, and all the police have to do is catch him. It's terrifying.
Yes, but the police may not think he's guilty. After all, they work in secret, you know. They may have their own ideas about a certain lady.
I wish I knew what the police were thinking.
But look, why not ask them?
Well, that's easier said than done. Oh, just a minute, Father.
She spots flashbulbs going off.
Father, goodbye now.
She hangs up and goes back to the scene, where some detectives have gone from the house through the crowd to a car. Eve watches them.
I'll see you back at the office about 2 o'clock, sir.
While one detective gets into the car with the driver, the one who saw him off walks away. Eve leaves the crowd and starts to follow him. He approaches the shepherd's pub. When he goes inside, she crosses the street after him. Reaching the doors, she tries to peek through the windows, then turns away, thinking. She begins to act faint, then enters the pub. As one man who's not the detective notices her, she steps toward the bar, appearing very troubled. She stands between the detective and the man who'd noticed her to order.
May I have a small brandy, please?
The man who noticed her tips his hat.
Madam, pardon my intrusion, but is there by any chance any assistance I could be of?
No, thank you.
She turns from him and toward the detective to pay and get her drink. The detective does watch her step away from the bar, still greatly troubled. She sits at a table where she sets down her drink, then shifts away from a corner. When both men approach her, she rests her head on one hand. The other man gets there first.
I most solemnly assure you, madam, would be a pleasure if there was any assistance I could be of.
Thank you very much.
Oh, if you'll allow me to say so, you look depressed.
She glances at the detective, who sits at a table nearby.
I'm perfectly all right.
Nodding, he backs away. Eve peeks through her fingers at the detective sitting with his back to her. Removing her hand from her face, she leans back against the wall and closes her eyes. The other man notices.
Is there anything I can do?
She opens her eyes to the detective.
Look, I don't know your trouble, but you don't look very well to me. A little brandy can't do you any harm. Why not drink it?
He walks away. So she tries something else. He leaves his table to go back to her and sits.
My great-aunt died over a glass of brandy, but it was her 15th that day. Feeling any better?
Yes, thank you. You left your lunch over there.
Well, do you want to feel lonely? I'll go back to it in a minute. Perhaps you're allergic to bars. Look, would you feel less uneasy if I sat with you? Or more uneasy? Perhaps you're allergic to strange men, too.
No, I love strange men. I mean, I'm very fond of them.
I'll just go and get my lunch.
As he gets it, she smiles a little. He returns with a sandwich and his drink. Then they turn to the talk at the bar.
I heard they clocked him so hard that his false teeth went right across the room.
I know I'm pretty silly, but I overheard two people on the street today talking about the murder. They went into a lot of detail.
He drinks.
I felt so sick and giddy, I just had to come in and have a brandy. My father says I tend to over-dramatize everything.
I expect he's right. I know how you feel, though. I hate violence myself.
He eats.
Doesn't that make it rather difficult for you?
He looks at her.
I mean, I think we ought to face up to the ugly side of life. Now, me, for instance, I'm an actress. I ought to face up to all sorts of experiences, oughtn't I?
Oh, I don't know. Supposing I happen to be a librarian. A librarian doesn't have to encounter much violence except an occasional encyclopedia falling on his head.
But you're not a librarian, are you?
No, I'm not. How do you know?
You just don't look like a librarian.
You don't look like an actress.
Oh, I thought I did.
He shakes his head.
Well, I'm only a beginner, really. That is, I've only played one part in public.
Could I have seen you?
I don't think so. It was in the church hall. I played the fourth deadly sin.
Are you good?
I was pretty deadly.
What was this Jonathan Cooper after?
At the bar.
I heard there was nothing stolen.
Perhaps he did it for the fun of it, like that old woman in Chelsea last week.
Poor Charlotte, and would imagine coming home and finding your husband horribly dead. Policemen and detectives all over the house and the blood.
Careful, careful, careful. Remember, you're sensitive to that sort of thing. You'll bring on another fainting fit.
I hear that Charlotte Inwood's going back into the show in a couple of days. Must be dreadful to sing and dance and be gay with that horrible picture still burning in one's mind.
Oh, it's the old story. Is not the actor the man with a heart all over again? I once had a cousin who had a duodenal ulcer and an extremely funny face both at the same time. Everybody laughed at him when he was telling his symptoms. His name was Jim.
That must have been terrible.
What, no? Jim's quite a common name.
They look at each other.
I wonder what Charlotte Inwood is really like. Really, I mean.
Oh, hello, Nellie. That's Charlotte Inwood's maid.
Nellie enters the pub. She approaches the bar, where the server greets her.
Hello, Nellie. I didn't expect to see you so soon. How are you bearing up, Dax, after last night?
Mrs. Tippett, what I've been through. All those policemen.
Bothering you with a lot of questions, I suppose.
Questions? They've been asking me this, asking me that, all morning long. I didn't know whether I was coming or going. Gin and lemon, please, Mrs. Tippett. Not too much lemon, dear.
Okay.
Mind you, they never laid a finger on me. But, oh, the questions. Nag, nag, nag. How did you know it was Mr. Cooper? How many times you seen him and where? And did he give you anything? Blimey, he never gave me nothing. And how long you been Miss Inwood's maid? Well, they was gentlemanly and polite, all right, but give me the bleeding rations any day, dear.
She drinks.
Yes, you got to watch your step when you're up against the police. And if that wasn't enough, when I came out of the house, the reporters pounced on me with their questions asking me the lowdown. I just jumped out of my skin when that photographer's flashbulb went. Well, I mean, fancy taking my picture.
You're quite a celebrity, you lucky girl. I'll have to buy the Daily Mirror tomorrow.
Of course, I'm not saying a word to the reporters, not a word. After all, who discovered the body?
She points at herself.
I'll be a star witness at that trial, and my story ought to be worth something. And I've no intention of giving it away.
Isn't she talking too much?
Too much, too loud, too everything. Nellie, get yourself a respectful. How do you feel now?
Oh, I feel a little better, thank you.
He checks his watch.
I have to go. I don't like leaving you here alone. Do you feel fit enough to let me see you home?
I have a car.
Perhaps you'd better let me drive it for you.
Well, that's very kind of you. I do still feel a bit wobbly.
To be quite honest, it isn't really kindness at all. I mean, I'm afraid I maneuvered it.
They stand.
How clever of you.
He escorts her from the table.
I'll drink to that on you. The
it's apple gin, anything.
They pass Nellie and the other man on their way out.
All right, Nellie, I hope it chokes you. Don't miss a trick, do you? You're always on the make.
Eve pauses in the doorway with the detective behind her. Soon after, the detective rounds a corner driving her car and pulls up to another townhouse. They get out.
My mother's really a dear, my father too, of course. But they shouted one another, and neither one liked to shout. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. You've been extraordinarily kind, and you know nothing whatsoever about me.
Oh, I don't know, Miss Gill. You were born in South Africa the 17th of September, wasn't it? You were educated in America, and now you're studying at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. Your mother and father don't live together. You're a very well-behaved young lady until today, but you're allergic to murder, and that drove you to drink. I hope it's only temporary.
But I don't even know your name. I only know that you play the piano.
I'm so sorry. It's stupid of me. I forgot. The name is Smith.
Just ordinary Smith?
Reaching under his jacket, he pulls out his wallet and gives her a card. She reads, Wilfred O. Smith, Detective Inspector.
A detective?
I hope you don't mind.
Oh, no, of course not.
I'm delighted. By the way, I don't suppose you and your mother are interested in tea. With a detective, that is.
Of course. Especially with a detective. Would you like to have tea with us one day?
Oh, I'd love to. How about this afternoon? Well, tomorrow then.
Yes. Yes, that's fine.
With a smile and a slight tip of his hat, Smith walks off, and Eve turns to the front door with her keys. She unlocks the door and goes inside. Smith glances back as he walks away. So Eve did eventually successfully use her acting skills to forge a friendship with Smith. But how will she use them to get closer to Charlotte? Find out in part 2 of 3 of Stage Fright, next time on Movies for the Blind. The voice of Eve's father might ring a bell with fans of Christmas movies. Alastair Sim starred in what's possibly the most popular version of A Christmas Carol, also known as Scrooge, and happily, it is also available in described versions. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.